friends. Welcome to Sky House Herbs Podcast. I'm Ashley Ellenboss, a clinical herbalist, and in this space, I share my knowledge and experience with plant medicine to help you on your own journey of healing and transformation. Join me in exploring the ancient wisdom of plant spirit medicine and how it can be used to heal the body, mind, and spirit. We'll talk to experts in the field and share stories from people who've been transformed by powerful plant allies. New episodes are released each Monday, so please subscribe. And now, let's explore this mystical world of plant medicine together. Hey everyone, welcome in. I am here today with my grandmother, Virginia Millen, and I'm really excited to have her on. I've been wanting to have my grandmother on for some time now, just to talk about what she's learned in her 93 years of life, to ask questions about her Sicilian ancestry, her knowledge of herbs and food as medicine, and yeah, some other subjects around God and religion, which is, you know, my grandmother's really been, for me, I think, the most influential person in my spiritual life, in my family. So
sweet. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's so most important to me.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts that you've given to me and to so many of us in our family, is this real love and trust of something bigger.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's there no matter what.
Yeah.
Whether you're a good person, a bad person, or whatever, it's always there for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And we forget that sometimes, you know?
We do. We all do. We all do.
Yeah. And we were talking before, when we were sitting on our couch having some tea, you were talking about Richard Rohr, and he was talking about, what was it, grief and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting, because I think sometimes when we have sadness, you know, there can be anger that comes. I know when we lost Rhea, our dog, a few weeks ago, you know, there were all a lot of different feelings, but anger came up with mm-hmm. the grief. Like, this isn't fair. Why me? Why her? Why now? Is there something I should have done? Why didn't that do more? You know, I think that those two feel coupled, although we don't often think about anger and grief together. Can you say a little bit about what it meant for you hearing that?
What I understand is he says we should have that too. That's part of it. It's part of it. And I thought, it's true. Why wouldn't we be angry if someone that we loved died, is gone, would be angry? Or if that person had changed from the person that you knew years ago, had changed and wasn't that same person, that person, you would be angry. You'd want that person to be the person that you knew back then, the kind, loving person, not the person that's just sort of self-absorbed in what they want. So I can see where that whole area of reading, it was very interesting. There was much more to mm-hmm. get from that, and I can give you that link for
okay.
it. I'll just send it to you.
Thank you. Yeah. Because grief, I think there's so much grief in our lives these days, mm-hmm. you know. I think we all live not only for losses, like personal losses in our lives, but kind of collective grief for what's happening in the world with our planet, in war with children, you know.
For me, the hardest thing is right now, and I keep telling myself I'm not going to watch television, but it just breaks my heart to see all the suffering of children in the war that's going on in the Ukraine, in Gaza, and to see all the suffering in their children.
Yeah.
They're not having some of the things I had, and maybe you too had growing up. The fun, even when you were hurt by friends, and even when you were doing things that you weren't happy about, but still you were, that was child play, and you had that time in your life that you can look back.
Yeah.
They can't. I don't know. And I think, what can I do? I mean, I can't go there and be a I mean, I have some nursing background, but I can't do anything like that at 93. What do I do? So I pray about it, hoping that prayer will lead me to find a purpose of why am I still here? Why am I still here?
Yeah.
93. There's not much a 93-year-old. And yet there are, I would be able to do many things if I weren't so lightheaded.
Yeah.
Why am I so lightheaded? I don't know.
Yeah. So tell me about the prayer. Like how, what is your prayer life like?
Oh, I talk. I talk all the time at home. I say, if I see something I like, I really do love to be grateful. I love the feeling of being grateful that I'm looking at something and I see the beauty, but I know that something higher has given that person the grace to make that beautiful.
Mm.
That, yeah, I love that. Grace, I love that. I think we need to share more gratitude to God. Even when you see the trees blowing the wind, you know, there is a saying, I mean, every night I have a routine of prayer that I say looking out at the sky. And I don't know if I want to share it or not. But I do. I stand by my bathroom window, and I look out. And I say, guardian angel, come close to me.
Mm.
And I wait, and I wait. And then I say, take me up among the stars and the moon with Grandpa, with Al. Yeah.
Mm.
Heal my body and heal my soul and stand guard over me through the night. And return me before dawn. And then my favorite thing is to say, hover over me, God.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, an Our Father. That's something I just have to do it just gives me a peace now that I'm alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't do it before. I don't know. It's like in life, I mean, I'm finding out as I get older and I'm living alone, there are things that I start to think about and do that I would not be doing if Al were alive. Because
mm-hmm.
we might do something different. And I know, you know, I know I wonder what he thinks and what he does, but I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much we don't know. Yeah.
There is so much we don't know.
Yeah. And that's okay. That's okay. Who do we think we are that we should know everything?
Really? And if at 93, you say that there's a lot you don't know, I feel like that's, and you know, if we are also lucky to live to be that age, mm-hmm. I mean, do you feel like that wisdom of there's so much we don't know and that we shouldn't know, we don't need to know, is that something that came over time for you? Or do you think that's something you've always had since you were a child?
I had a busy life. I never was bored. Never was bored. And I never let four girls in the household think that they could be bored, because if they said they were going to be bored, I found a dust rag and a place for them to dust or clean or do. And Annie can tell you.
That's my mom.
I would give her the bucket with the paintbrush and say, now you can go out in the backyard and paint that part of the house.
That's great.
And she did. She did. She took the bucket and off she went.
Yeah. Yeah.
She didn't get bored.
No. Yeah, it's true. I think we can, you know, but I think, okay, one question I have is about busyness, because I feel like.
Busyness?
Yeah, busyness.
I know.
Why do we get so busy? And like, do you think busyness, because I feel like, I don't know, was your mom always busy, busy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what he asked me. And I said, what is the one thing that you wish you would have done? And I have to say, I wished that I had spent more time with my children when they were growing up, that I wasn't so gone. I had to be sewing. I had to create it. We were going to go to a special doing. I had to have a certain kind of dress, and I had to have it the way I wanted it. I couldn't just go in my closet or go to the store and buy it. No, it had to be the way I wanted it. And of course, that took time, right? And that time took away from your children, right?
Yeah.
And so I was a lot like that, even with quilting, creating a design. I still go down to the basement and I look at all the fabric I have, which is
lots, like shelves and Tupperwares of fabric.
Yeah. And I think, oh God, this would make such a beautiful quilt. And I can see it all, crosses and all this, and never going to be probably, unless I make the tops and just leave them for somebody else to quilt.
But okay, a question about busyness, because this is something that I've been exploring too, because, you know, I grew up with my mom, probably much like you. When you're in a household, I mean, there is a lot to do. I'm not saying being a mom is, there's a lot of work, cleaning, cooking, laundry, you know, planning things for the kids and activities and driving.
But yeah, Girl Scouts and all the kind of things that you do at school for your kids.
Right.
The games that they play.
Yeah.
Soccer, all that.
So there's all of that. And I've been really thinking about how busyness is also sometimes an escape from how hard it is to just be present.
I think that's so true.
Because it's hard to be, like, it's hard to mom sometimes. It's hard to be with your kids when they're fighting or they're upset about something or they want you to play puppy. And I don't want to crawl on the ground and play puppy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, that's not fun for me. But so I get busy so that I don't have to do the things that are really hard for me.
Yeah, I wonder too. You're right. I know. I mean, I'm seeing this with my great-grandchildren. You know, when I see the girls come over and Kathy gets down on the floor with them with all of the beads and everything. I can't do that anymore. And I'm angry with myself that I can't, because I feel like I'm missing out on something that I want to do, but I can't do. I can't do it. So I just kind of talk with them, but then they're not there. They're not old enough yet.
Yeah. They're still pretty young, but I think now you're much more present. I mean, you weren't present with me, but I think when you're in mother mode, it's a lot harder to slow down because life feels so fast. But I think what I'm learning from you now is the importance of spending that time with your kids and getting down on the ground and playing with the beads and taking the time to say, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Because, you know, even my girls at 8 and 5, they grow up so fat. It's like they're already like spindly legged. They're not babies. And no, I'll never get that back.
No. And also, I think they have their problems. And why didn't I ask them, how was school today? Or how do you feel about this or that? I don't remember doing much of that. I don't remember asking them, but I know that they would ask, they would say something about, today this person said this and this to me. My mother would say to me, you know, if I said anything like that, or I said the teacher was this or that, my mother would say, what did you do? You know, she wasn't the kind that would show the sympathy of you.
Oh, she would take the other side.
She would say the teacher is the right one, not you. And I always remembered that. So I didn't always stick up for the teachers, but I didn't I don't think I gave enough time. I think it was, if I were to do it over again, I would not have so many hobbies.
Yeah.
While they were little, growing up. I don't know. I don't know, maybe that's the way we heal. You know, our brain is made, they said, with one side is larger for the negative in life, and the other side is shorter and smaller for the positive side of thinking. So that's why we always dwell on the negative. Did you know that?
I didn't. But I mean, it makes sense evolutionarily that, you know, to survive in the world, you have to be more aware of things that could go wrong and negatives to survive.
That's true. It did say, the article did say that.
Yeah. But that sucks.
It does suck because I don't want to remember some of the negative things that I said to Al at times.
You That's know. Her husband, her late husband.
Or that he said to me, I want to think of those fun times when we would laugh.
Yeah.
When we were at Cancun once and we went to step onto the street, but the gutters were like 14 feet high instead of 8 feet. And we didn't know that. So we went to step and your grandfather fell into the street and I went, oh, and I fell over him. And then we both laughed and then went to go swimming.
I'm guessing inches, not feet. Because if you fell 14 feet.
No, inches.
Okay.
Right. Did I say feet?
Yeah. I was thinking to myself, that would really hurt.
No. That was 14. Yeah. It was a little bit bigger. But things like that, I like to think about because we laughed about it, you know. And we had a good time. Yeah.
But that's the gratitude practice, right? So when you're saying now, what's so important to you is remembering the things you're grateful for and looking around and finding gratitude. And I think, isn't that a spiritual practice how we can maybe build that part of our brain that is, you know, the positive side, like to make that bigger is to
I think that's something for something. All of us to strive at is to think of more of the positive and also to put more kindness into our thinking of everybody. Mm. People that you see, even when you're going to the grocery store. I mean, you know, I read about these mystics, how they think and thought, and so much of it has to do with giving so much praise to the creator. But the creator, the way they talked about the creator is the way we're just beginning to understand creation. What's in one is in all, is in the all, the total.
Yeah.
Nothing is alone.
So if we're not nice to the person at the checkout counter, they're just as much a part of God as everyone else.
And also, you don't know whether they're going to touch because you weren't very nice with your words to her or him. Mm. And so he's going to go home and take it out on his, you never know, on somebody else. And so that's where I think Richard Rohr comes in and says, one word can change an attitude for somebody. We never know how much different it can be. And it's kind of scary when I read that or heard it.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary if we think of the negative things we've said, but if we can think about the ways we could positively influence, like one of the things I like to do as a practice is when I go out and I see a beautiful woman, because I think women can be not very nice to each other sometimes. And when I see a beautiful woman and she's maybe wearing something nice, or I just like her energy, I'll just compliment her about something. I'll just say, wow, you know, like your skin is radiant, or like, I really like your shoes. And it's like, it's not just the shoes, but it's like, I see you, you're a beautiful woman. And like, I want to put that into the space between us rather than jealousy or, you know, I think a lot of women, I don't know, they don't feel, they feel a competition with others. And I
think that's true. Women can be very hurting in that way.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, it's like,
Or preoccupied
and not even see
what,
you know, I think I think one of the things you've taught me is seeing the beauty in things and like being able to speak that and say that and see the good and speak the good. I think a lot of us see the good, but we don't speak it. We don't make that next step. But if Richard Rohr is saying that the word is so important, we have to speak that good next thing.
Yeah.
If we want to see kindness in the world more.
Yeah. That's for sure. There was today there was one of the speakers, there was a video, and you might want to look at it. It was on part of his program. And the writer is a poet, a poet and a writer, and she's young. She looks very young. And I put it on my iPad. I want to read it every now and then because it's beautiful what she says about grief and fear and all of that too. But she writes it in a poetry type of of giving.
Yeah. And like that's such a gift to the world when someone can articulate things into words that you can read every day. You know, that's such a gift.
I have a neighbor who I think is just unbelievable. Her name is Nancy. She has two daughters. They're twins, and they are not at home now. She has about three or four grandchildren. But anyway, she has all of in our neighborhood. She invites everybody to come every other week on Friday for tea at two.
Oh, that is
and she
nice.
Has tea at two, from 2 to 4. And we all know we go home at 4, right? And we talk about the neighborhood, what's going on. If someone is ill, one of the gals is going through chemo now. And the devotion that comes from the women that are meeting there. And I haven't gone for about 3 weeks because I had appointments on Friday. But it's really nice to see women in a neighborhood walk to her house and go in, sit down, and talk about just good things or anything that's disturbing in the neighborhood or anything that's disturbing about the world, sharing your thoughts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, kind of women thing. Gathering together and talking, using their voices. Yeah. I love that. I think that is a powerful way things
And isn't
can
a religious
change.
Thing at all. It has nothing to do with religion, yeah. But it sure tells me that it is religious, you know?
I love that.
Yeah.
So another topic I wanted to touch on is just because you grew up in a very unique time.
I did.
Yeah. And
looking back,
you were born in 1930.
Yeah.
During the Great Depression. You grew up the child of two immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. From Sicily. And what town were your parents from again?
My mother was from Petrosino. She came when she was 2 years old.
Uh-huh.
And my father was in Leva de Mara. It's a little village right by the ocean. And he always talked about going out swimming. And he always loved it there because it was salt water. So he said you could just float.
Wow.
And he loved having, I think it was the squeamy fish that are long. They look like snakes. What is that
like
called?
Like an eel?
An eel. He would eat eel.
Oh, wow.
His grandmother or his mother would, I guess, I don't know how they would eat it, but he said it was so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, and then when they moved to the United States and they lived in Beloit, he would hunt rabbit and bring rabbit home, and you would help skin rabbits.
And I'd go hunting with him a couple times.
Yeah.
My mother would put my pajamas on and then the snowsuit, and I would run through the cornfield thinking other men were shooting.
Not the safest.
That little 7-year-old. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also at that time, there was a lot of closeness, and even in our neighborhood, the people, you know, my father was very giving. He gave, people gave people tomatoes and lettuce and whatever he had. And we had an apple tree. I have to tell you the story about the apple tree. The apple tree, did I ever tell you that story?
I don't think so.
My father, well, he was very handy. He built a beautiful white picket fence between the yard and the garden, okay? And then he built a trellis and a gate. He could go into the garden. I mean, that was his idea, you know. So, and then we didn't have a fence, so the neighbors could come over and we could go over. So, but the kids, and I was part of it too, because I was part of the kids in the gang. When the apple season came in the late summer, green apples, oh my gosh, could hardly wait. We could all go at night when we were playing Kick the Can or Run My Good Sheep Run. Have you ever heard those were night games we played, and it was fun. Anyway, what we would do then is go steal green apples from the tree. And so one year my father caught the older kids. I would never take them from our tree because it would be hard with the fence and everything. Anyway, he found out that they had taken the apples, and he went down and chopped the tree down. And he came in and told my mother, he said, I cannot take a chance of one of those children falling and being hurt from the tree. So I cut the tree down.
Wow. What do you make of that story?
Well, I miss that we didn't have apples. He didn't cut the cherry trees down because they couldn't steal from the cherry tree because they were too close to the yard. The apple tree was by in the garden.
Well, and
what I thought about, not then, but later in my life, I thought, wow, he was really thinking outside of himself. My father did do a lot of that. He had a very, very difficult childhood. So, yeah. So he did, but he was hard on all of us. And my grandfather was the alcoholic in our family. But he was good to the grandchildren. He was wonderful. Take me down to the river, Rock River, where he had his garden. And he'd pick cucumbers and he'd wash them in the river and give them to me. And I got, and you know what happened?
What?
That little girl got worms.
Oh.
Because, you know, it's
the river.
The river. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when I went to the bathroom, I had worms and they all got, I remember them. They're all crazy. And Aunt Mary and Aunt Sadie, they were like teenagers then.
Oh, I bet they were like, yeah.
Oh my gosh,
out.
They all had a fit. Well, my mother took me to the doctor and I guess I had medication. And they told my grandfather, you know, you can't give her anything from the river. It has to be washed at home. Yeah.
What about herbs? Do you remember anything about?
Yeah, my grandmother with the we always went out to get greens along the road because nobody did.
There's no spraying then, right?
No spraying, and nobody did anything that was going to harm what was growing. So we would go on Sundays in the spring with bags, and we would pick dandelion greens and the most delicious. Asparagus, tiny, you know, long and real thin and just melt in your mouth.
Wow.
Yeah. And did that when I was like 7, 8, 9. All of us kids did. My parents would put 3 kids in the car and off we would go.
Pick your spring greens.
Yeah.
Were there any like home remedies that you remember your mom or your aunt or your grandmother making for any colds or anything like that?
Yeah, I think all they used were like camphorated oil. And I remember a lot of those. And then my mother would put in the oven flannel. So the flannel would get nice and warm and put it on our chest with the camphorated oil.
Yeah, for coughing and things like that.
Yeah, and I don't know. And of course, they used a lot of plants. Remember, they used parsley and they used basil. And the Irish and the Irish and the Scandinavians, I mean, we ate stuff that they wouldn't think. Artichokes, my mother would give me like 50 cents or a quarter, and I'd go to this, on my way home, I'd get the meat, and then she'd say, get 5 artichokes, and they were 5 cents each. No one ever heard of artichokes except Italians, and we loved them.
Did you grow them? Were they grown locally then?
They must have come on the train from the south because it would be winter. We'd have them too.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And no, we couldn't have lettuce in the winter because I guess you couldn't ship it then. But we always had head lettuce, but I liked head lettuce. I didn't know there was no value in it. But I liked my father's garden with the lettuce. We had delicious lettuce in the summer.
Yeah.
And
he
tomatoes.
Was an amazing gardener. I remember in Arizona where they moved later, he had lemon and orange trees and all the herbs and a rose garden. And
he had radishes, cucumbers, what else? Carrots, peas. The peas were good. My grandfather mainly did tomatoes and lettuce and cucumbers. Trying to think of what else. I don't remember really. I just know it was fun to go down there by the river. You know,
it's a great idea. I mean, to plant your garden by a natural water source.
Yeah.
And it was public land. It was just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All that. They were all really good gardeners. Really good gardeners. My father was really a good gardener.
Do you remember any tricks or anything that he would do that you think?
Well, manure, you know, that's the only way you fertilize. It was awful. He put it in the trunk of the car, you know, paper and stuff, and then go to the farm and get the manure.
Yeah.
And then bring it back. And we all had to smell that. I'm sure the neighbors didn't like it.
Oh, but he had the best zucchinis and vegetables in the whole block. So
there was one zucchini that I have never been able to buy. And we called it zucchini longhe. It was about this long and kind of curved, and it was about this wide, and it was white. And we made soup with it. And so you'd cut it up in cubes, and you'd put tomato and saute onion. I can't remember what else. I made it, and I just love it. And it would, she'd put it, you know, in with water and cook it all day. The zucchini never got soft. It was that kind of a zucchini.
More of a crisp kind. Interesting.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
I've tried to explain it to different grocery stores what it was.
Like,
and they'd say to me, I've never heard of that.
Oh, interesting.
I said, Byerly said to me one day, if you find that you can get it anywhere, we can get it. But they never called me and told me anything. So I've never had it. But my father would grow it.
He would grow that.
Yeah. And if he were living, he'd give you some seeds for it.
I know. I think that's a big movement right now in the herbal and in the organic movement is collecting and saving seeds, because things like that, you know,
I wonder if I could call and see if I could get the seeds for them.
Yeah, we can look into it and see if we can do some research. I can search the webs.
See. And say, you know, the zucchini never gets soft.
Yeah.
You make soup. Only thing you can do with it is make soup.
Oh, and it has to be cooked. It's like a...
Oh, yeah. You throw it in and let it cook.
Yeah.
And the tomato and the onion and whatever else you put in there. It's a vegetarian. It's really good.
A lot of the things that, you know, in Italian cooking, just from watching my mom and you cook, it's like everything has a base of olive oil, garlic, olive oil, onions, and tomatoes.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the base. And then all sorts of other magic things happen, but those are like the main four ingredients.
That's right. My mother rarely used anything else.
Yeah.
She did not go for all the fancy herbs that everybody put in things. She'd say, doesn't need it. I think it did, but, you know, but yeah, I think that a lot of those, like she used to make a bean soup. You probably make it, but that one has the basics of just what you said, the tomato and all that. And then the beans.
And the beans,
And you cook it all day. And now when I make it, it comes out like I use a beater and I make it like a soup. It's my favorite. Of all the soups in the world, that bean soup is my favorite. I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah.
Well, I think I have one more question to wrap us up. And this was something that you had mentioned. My grandmother and I had taken a class on Southern Italian folk medicine. Do you remember we took that online class together with, what was it? The sacred, I'm forgetting the woman's name. Do you remember the name of the woman or the school?
No, I must have it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, her book, Benedictaria, is being published. So it's on order. I'm going to get us both a copy of it. But I'll include a link in the description for you all, because I can't remember her name right now. But I remember we were talking about Sicilian phrases, because they were talking a lot about, you know, and there was one phrase I was hoping you could say here so that it's like forever in recorded, which was when you would do something that was naughty and your mother would say, don't make Jesus cry for you.
Yeah.
Tell that story. And do you remember then how it went in Sicilian?
Sicchiange.
Sicchiange.
Signori is Jesus. La Signori you could almost say it's a she, but you don't. La Signori Sicchiange. Means it cries when you're naughty. And someone said to me once when I told them that, well, God, that's really throwing a guilt on you. I said, I never thought of it like that. I said, it wasn't a guilt to me. It was like, oh, why would I ever want to make Jesus cry, who's so good? Why would I want him to cry?
And that's that innocent child, the child mind, which is, you know, that I think is rooted in kindness.
I don't know, but Catherine said, go, Grandma.
That's that, my cousin,
yeah,
her granddaughter.
Go, Grandma. That really throws a guilt. And of course, her husband, who's a counselor, said, yeah.
I guess it's frame. It's like how you take it, though, and the context. And if you really love Jesus, it's like, you know, don't make your mother cry. Don't make, you know, I mean, it's true. There's a little bit of guilt there, but there's also some accountability, which I think is
so
good.
I think it's a great phrase. I just felt that it was just something that was hurting God, who we knew loved us so much.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, but when Catherine said that, I guess I said to myself, I guess that's not something I'm going to share with the grandkids.
But I think this brings us full circle back to the beginning of our conversation today, which was, you know, talking about spirituality as the center and sort of the most important part of our lives. And, you know, if you have that perspective that everything you do, you know, is being seen, you know, is being watched. And I know that this is something that you've taught me too, is that the God of your understanding is kind and benevolent and isn't punishing or harsh. And so, you know, what are the, you know, I feel like that little phrase just brings us back to this idea that like what we do matters, someone's watching, and that we should pay attention to that. And that that can deepen our spiritual awareness and our spiritual practices and how we're living.
And also thinking that we're not ever alone, are we?
Yeah.
We're never, ever alone. You know, I live in that house now, that big house by myself. And I have never, since Grandpa died, I have never felt afraid. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The girl, me, who's afraid of everything. Everything you can imagine, even when your grandfather was living, I was made sure that the door was locked or I heard a noise down the basement or I did this or that. I don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
I think I feel the house is secure. He's got nails in the windows and he's got double locks on the door. If I make sure that everything is taken care of, then I'm okay.
Yeah. Because you got God, you've got a connection.
Yeah, everything's there. Everything. I'm never, ever alone.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it is good.
Yeah. Thank you, Grandma.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your light and your stories with the people who watch. And yeah, I would love to hear comments. If any of you have any comments or questions, please post them, share them. And yeah, stay tuned in a few minutes or moments. There'll be a little after video with more information about my upcoming herbal apprenticeship and ways to stay in touch. So thank you, everyone.
That's great. That's great.
Thank you, Grandma.
Well, thank you to have this wonderful family and it's grown so, you know, and all of you feel so connected to each other. Mm. It's what I see that is just such a gift of life to see all my grandchildren and now my great grandchildren, everybody together, even if they're far apart in time, they're not far apart in their communicating with each other.
Yeah.
And they love each other.
They're
good to each other.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for setting that, you know, being the matriarch of the family and setting an example of how important family and connection is. I think, you know, that's been one of your, that's one of the legacies that will live on.
Well, that's wonderful to know.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. And thank you, Grandma.
Thank you.